This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good morning. You're tuned in to The Property Show, our weekly take on all things property related. And I'm Philip C. On today's Property Show, I will be speaking to Eli McGeever, Director of Research and Tech Innovation at One Global Labs, on latest developments in the global property market and shifting trends and technologies that will shape it. A very good morning to you, Eli. The past 6 months, really, it's been a roller coaster, right, for equity markets. It's been challenging. And I think what we've seen so far is that the Fed has been hiking rates to an unprecedented rate. This must put quite a lot of pressure on property markets, no?
Yeah, look, it has been a period of a bit of volatility, you know, in the reverse of what we saw probably in 2021, where we saw a lot of equities and commodities and that sort of thing increase. Now we're seeing a bit of easing in equities. And up until probably June, we still saw the commodities increasing, but we're starting to see those pull back a little bit now. And with any change, it does put a bit of pressure on different markets, and the property market has been on fire, let's say, for the last 18 months.
Yeah.
But just with unprecedented demand, especially and supply of new properties and properties coming onto the market. You know, people didn't want to sell, so they were holding back their properties for fear of not being able to purchase something else that they wanted to buy as well.
So I guess with rising interest rates, do you find builders and construction companies, I think, pausing or rethinking a bit about adding more supply into the market in view that financing and access to capital markets will be a bit harder for the broader market generally?
What we're seeing is, you know, it's not 2015 or 2016 where there was a lot of supply of new builds on the market. There has been quite a constrained supply level, depending on which market you're in and which country. But especially, you know, the UK and Australia and that sort of thing, there has been, I guess, a lack of supply, and that still remains. And the challenges, you know, were really before the interest rates started. It was getting the price of lumber, the price of timber, the price of labor as well, just with employment rates and employment figures so tight. Getting that material through supply chains and that sort of thing was a very big challenge. So it's not so, I wouldn't say so much the interest rates that will have an impact, but it was a lot of other things as well. But we do have that lack of supply in a lot of markets. So there is still the demand. People still need a place to live. And we still see very tight rental vacancy markets as well.
I wonder, that's why when you say that supply was tight, perhaps it will loosen a bit as we see some easing there and demand ease a bit. I guess that's a function of local demand, that there is still some local demand. You know, if we focus a bit of demand by foreign investors for properties globally, right? How has that changed? Yeah. Is that very different now? Because these investors tend to be a bit on the top 20%, top 5% of the income spend. They probably are more immune to the global shocks that we are experiencing now.
Yeah, look, I guess if we look at, you know, from Asia and Singapore and Hong Kong, two markets that we're in, the currencies, especially back to the UK market, have actually shown an increase in appreciation higher than the appreciation of properties in a market like the UK. Now that, well, Singapore, not so much Hong Kong, can travel a bit easier as well. It helps with the property purchase. And we've really started to see the Singapore market especially, and the Singapore buyers come back into the market for overseas property from the end of last year. And especially Q2 was a very busy time for especially buyers from Singapore, but Hong Kong as well, you know, a little bit later, just because of the COVID cases and the lockdowns and that sort of thing, or the pseudo lockdowns that we had here in Hong Kong.
Yeah, can you help me parse out the difference between Hong Kong and Singapore? I mean, you are based in Hong Kong. We've heard so many stories of people leaving Hong Kong due to the current situation they're in. Many Hong Kong investors looking outside Hong Kong for a foreign property. Perhaps it's a reverse story in Singapore, isn't it? Where there are investors into Singapore looking to purchase investments into Singapore. Can you help me understand the difference between the investment appetite in Hong Kong versus Singapore?
Yeah, I guess a lot of it, if we look at Singapore first, a lot of it is on the rental demand side, and especially in Asia and expats looking for a place to go that might have been in Hong Kong previously, and then looking at the place that they'll go next. because they can travel easier and the conditions are a bit more favourable from that side of things. So that's helping to push up, especially the rental market. You know, here in Hong Kong, the rental market is pretty easy compared to a lot of parts of the world. You know, people have there are vacancies in the location. So finding a rental property here is much easier than Singapore at the moment.
How much has it eased in Hong Kong? Just give us a sense about how easy is it and how much yields have declined in Hong Kong?
Yeah, look, in terms of a yield basis, it really depends on the part of Hong Kong that you're in. But I, you know, speaking from personal experience, I haven't seen my rent go up in 4 years. Even on rental renewals, it's still staying at the same levels. In some places, it is dropping that had maybe a high percentage of expats. But there is, I guess, a sense that it is becoming a bit easier in Hong Kong compared to what it was in the early 2000s, where it was a very tight market, very difficult market from a perspective of purchasing, but also renting in there as well. If we look at, I guess, Hong Kong as moving out and moving abroad, you know, the UK market has been very popular for Hong Kong investors over the last, let's say, 20 years, but more so in the last 3 years, that has changed quite a bit in terms of what demand is, what people are looking for, and also the buyer profile. It used to be, you know, zone 1, 2, 3 London. That has changed over the last 5 years to look at Manchester, look at your Birminghams, and even over the last 2 or 3 years to look at more the owner-occupied locations around the UK, you know, the home counties in around London, and not just for 1 or 2 bed apartments, but looking at townhomes, semi-detached or detached homes as something that people are going to live in.
So UK remains relatively attractive as an investment. I think also from the perspective that currency for the British pound sterling hasn't really been very strong. You see a very strong US dollar. So I presume US isn't very much an attractive investment place at the moment. In view that we are seeing emerging market currencies really under so much pressure in the past few months, do we see this dent or temper demand for overseas properties?
I think it really depends on a number of factors, not just the currency. As you know, the Hong Kong dollar is, if we look at Hong Kong, the Hong Kong dollar is pegged to the US. So that's only grown in strength compared to the pound, compared to the Aussie dollar, for example. So that's been great for people of those currencies. For other currencies, such as the Thai baht, which has weakened, you know, quite significantly over the last couple of years, it's become a bit more of a challenge. However, we are seeing buyers coming back from those markets in the luxury market segment, in especially in London over the last 6 months or so. So buyers that aren't just fully invested in the Thai baht, that might have currency or you know, businesses abroad, can still purchase and still don't have that, I guess, that currency risk or the currency decline. But again, the Thai baht has declined against the US dollar, which is strengthened against basically all, if not all.
Yeah, I think the function of a stronger dollar as opposed to Thai.
Exactly. So it's weak, but relatively not compared to the pound or say the euro.
I mean, if you reflect now, it's been 3 months since markets have reopened across Southeast Asia. I mean, how has appetite and interest been for foreign properties, you know, this past quarter two versus, say, the same period last year? You know, how much jump are we seeing in demand and appetite for foreign investment?
Yeah, look, it's quite interesting, actually. If we look at sort of Hong Kong and looking into Asia, pre-COVID, it was a very strong destination. Malaysia, Thailand, Vietnam, Cambodia as well, and Japan. A lot of that demand went away during COVID, and it focused more on the UK and more on Australia and more on, I guess, stable markets or established, more mature markets. In the last 2 to 3 months, we've seen Thailand is receiving the most interest it's seen in 2 years or 3 years. The same thing with Japan, with the cheap yen. Those markets, the opportunity markets are starting to come back. And once Hong Kong does open up, I think we'll start to see more interest from into Thailand, into Southeast Asia again, once people can travel a bit more.
So interest in Asia, interest into buying properties in Asia. And I presume, maybe this is my perception, like for something like Thailand, are we talking about beach resorts in Phuket or is it just more broader in the appeal and interest?
Yeah, look, it's in Thailand, a lot of the interest is focused around Bangkok. And traditionally it had been the Airbnb type investment where you might get a 25 square meter or 250 square foot apartment in Bangkok and Airbnb it out. obviously that didn't work too much when there wasn't too much tourism. And that's why we're starting to see that come back. As tourists come back, we're starting to see a bit more of that. I saw recently as well that the Thai government is looking to allow foreigners to own land, not just apartments. That will be a little bit more of a luxury play. But again, it's something that's different in there. In that market that will attract a new set of purchases as well. Cambodia is looking to offer a Malaysia My Second Home, but a Cambodia My Second Home pathway that could potentially end in citizenship as well. So there are more options coming on for cross-border purchases.
And I find what's very interesting in the past 6 months, the conversation has been for what we call these unconventional locations. You know, it's not usually those tried and tested markets because governments are trying to get more tax revenues. They're trying to get the tourist dollar spent. We are seeing all these digital nomads come through. So there's a lot of conversations of the likes of Bali and such, trying to create all these attractive schemes. You know, in your part, when you look around the world, right, which are the attractive schemes that seem to be successful in attracting foreign investment in properties there? I presume something like Portugal sounds interesting. Which countries are really getting their act together?
Portugal has been very popular for a long time. It's a simple investment. I only need to spend 7 days a year to keep that PR going. So that's been one of the most popular ones. And in terms of other destinations, it has changed based on government regulations, of course. Malaysia, My Second Home, was very popular up until a couple of years ago when it was taken away, basically. The same thing in Australia with what they had with their significant investment visa, a different level of customer and a different, I guess, attraction for the customer as well. So Greece has been popular. Cyprus was popular up until the scandals that came out of that about 12 months ago. Mm. But a lot of destinations in Europe that allow access to the Schengen region and not necessarily a second passport, but a PR, another destination to live and to call home, basically, without needing to get a visa.
We'll have more from Eli after these messages. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned in to The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Philip C. and I have Eli McGeever, Director of Research and Tech Innovation of One Global Property Services. As we understand, where are the property investment opportunities taking place around the world in these volatile times? As we see more diverse pathways of getting different access to different markets and properties, presumably it's also interesting as well to secure the right financing, isn't it? And I think it's hard, especially as everyone tries to raise interest rates. What are the interesting financing solutions and products out there that you found out that try and keep the appetite level high for foreign investment?
Again, it depends on the market that you're in. So one out of Australia, you'll have to own a property already in Australia and have some rental income, but they'll basically let you forward borrow on your rental income to perhaps raise enough for a deposit or maybe a little bit more depending on how high the income is. So that's one option. In the more mature markets, let's say, or established market of the UK or Australia or the US, there's a lot more solutions in terms of just going to the bank or going to non-bank lenders and being able to get lending. In markets in Asia, it's a little bit more difficult or just impossible. So sometimes the developer will have deferred payments. The same thing in the Middle East. So you might pay over half of the property value and then over 5 years pay down the rest of the property value as well. So it's not as long as a 25 or a 30-year loan term, but it does allow for easier payments and to purchase that property today rather than, say, in 5 years on a cash basis.
So Eli, we had a very broad, all over the place conversation about demand and the types of demand that's coming through. I very much want to focus a bit on Asian investors coming through and where they are going to look and place their hardened cash in terms of where they invest in properties. You know, in the past, the usual assumption is that they go to places like London, Australia for simply their children's education. I wonder if the intentions have evolved and changed since then. Whether people are looking at retirement homes, people are looking for second homes for them to work from due to virtual nomad solutions. You know, how has the intentions of the investor changed for the past 5 years? And how has it especially changed as a result of the pandemic?
Yeah, you've still got, I guess, that classic, let's say, or established, whether it's for education, whether it's for immigration type level of buyer into Australia or the UK or wherever it may be. You know, for Hong Kong, for Canada is still quite popular. There is, I guess, a broadening of appetites. People have, especially during COVID, people have initially, they sort of shrunk what they would look at. However, since the longer COVID has gone on, we've seen more and more people look at more and more different options, whether that's countries, whether that's product type, the options are there, and people are looking at more things for, as you say, a number of different reasons. It could be retirement, or it could be just the digital nomad lifestyle that we can do much more easily now, not only with the companies that we work for, but also the countries that we're living in. They're more acceptable to this, you know, a one-year visa for digital nomads rather than having to do a three-month visa run, I'd say, as what Bali was in the past.
And I guess the pathway to purchase or even acquire a property has changed a lot. In the past, you would need someone on the ground there to help you facilitate and do all the paperwork necessary. All that's changed, isn't it? We are seeing cross-border platforms available.
You know, you can still purchase something and from far away, and have to, you know, DocuSign to sign the contracts. It is always good to have someone on the ground to look at the property as it settles. But it is easier not to go there, not to see the property before it's either purchased or at settlement time. But there are more and more solutions that make that process easier as well, especially during COVID.
The old-fashioned viewing the property still holds. Do you think Asian investors still do that? Like, they still fly over and view the property? Is that the old-fashioned view, and is that here to stay?
I think it will, to some extent, will always be here to stay, especially someone looking for maybe not just an investment, but something, whether it's for their kids or whether it's something to potentially live in. I think people will always want to. That's the ultimate, right? If we can do that, then we will do that. But COVID has helped speed up the digitization as well. So we've got more and more purchasers who are happy to do a video tour on Zoom, for example, or trust an agent in the location, whether it's London or whether it's Bali or whether it's Sydney, to actually go and do the viewing for them or on their behalf.
Which then, I think, begs the question about understanding the neighborhood, understanding the location, understanding the track record of the property developer and the information they need, right? So much information that's available out there. How do you make sure that the information is credible? How does the investor find out and make sure that these things are not just contrived and that actually that it's been validated and verified?
There are a number of different ways. And for instance, in the UK, one partner that we have is called HomeViews, and that's just basically a collection of reviews of developments and builders from who have lived in a development, whether they're an owner-occupier, whether they're a renter, just how and they review how good the facilities are, how good the management is. After they've lived in it, it's verified as well, so it's not just a bunch of, I guess, fake reviews on there. So that's one way. Another way is, you know, during due diligence process for the agent. For us at One Global, for instance, we look very carefully at the developer, if they've got financing in place, what their track record is, before we'll actually take on a project for them as well, and encourage the buyer to do the same thing either themselves or through their solicitor.
And I wonder, when you think about this, right, when you see investors now coming around London or visiting the sites and locations, right, do they narrow the selection way ahead, or do they have a broad view and then narrow gradually, right? What's the timeline in terms of how people filter and select down to the final property that they want?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the individual buyer themselves, and in a way with the agent and how much, if they're using an agent, how much the agent understands the buyer in terms of what they're looking for and their search criteria. If say they're looking for an investment property, they'll have a certain set of criteria that need to be met, say in a location that hopefully will grow, a certain price range, a certain rental return. And that's fairly straightforward. If they're looking for something to live in, going and visiting the neighborhood, getting a feel for it, definitely plays a part of the process as well. So that could take looking at three different developments, looking at four, looking at five, and even if they're doing it for immigration, renting the location first, or renting in a couple of different locations before they choose to buy, can also be part of the buying process.
I mean, you've been in the business for a very long time, and you've also looked a lot at different technology solutions out there. Just want to give you a perspective, which one area of property has technology managed to solve a lot, and which one area has technology not done enough?
I think we're still, whatever it is, whether it's sort of early in the stage or late in the stage, I think we're still on that journey. What I would probably start with in terms of what technology hasn't done enough of solving the process and the pain points is definitely in the sort of exchange to settlement period, and just making that a much more smoother and enjoyable experience for everyone involved.
Yep.
Not seeing so much sort of back and forth between the different parties, because there are a lot of parties at that point, and it's still a little bit drawn out, let's say. What I have seen that I do like is in the visualizations, in terms of, you know, we've gone from some static photos to floor plans. We're getting there in terms of VR and that sort of representation of properties. When we combine everything, whether it's a walkthrough on Zoom or if it's a virtual sort of walkthrough on your phone, or not there yet in terms of wearing the headsets, I think we still have a long way to go to make that more accessible to the purchaser, and in terms of not many people have a VR headset.
Okay.
But once they actually put it on, it's pretty cool. It goes a long way.
That's all the time we have for today. Thanks, Eli. On today's Property Show, I had the privilege of speaking to Eli McGeever, Director of Research and Tech Innovation at One Global Property Services. We have the 10 a.m. News Bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.